A half an hour after Saturday's Kentucky Derby was over, I was doing a paddock show at Sunray Park and Casino, introducing horses for the eighth race. It was an entry-level allowance contest for fillies and mares at Sunray Park and Casino, and I got to announce that my second choice in the race was a horse called Enjoy to the World. And when I introduced the horse, I said, the horse is trained by, and I almost stopped for a second because I had to make sure I said the words right, Kentucky Derby winning trainer, Benny Woolley. Benny Woolley joins us this morning on the Fox 1340 Paradise Village phone lines. Benny, good morning. Thanks for being with us.
How are you? You can call me Chip, though.
Okay, Chip. Well, either way, we're going to call you Kentucky Derby winning trainer. How's that?
Thank you. It's kind of hard to believe still.
It's an amazing story. It's a story that has been replayed over and over again. And I promise not to ask you a single question about trailers or driving or, you know, the broken foot. I just want to know, just, you know, there was so much emotion going into this. Talk about, you know, just seeing the horse come back to you in the winner's circle at that, in front of 150,000 people at Churchill Downs.
Well, it was a truly, truly emotional experience. And it was unbelievable. I mean, your emotions are so high, and you just—it's hard to believe that you're headed to the winner's circle of the Kentucky Derby.
When we talked on,
and couldn't hardly stand myself. It was just fantastic.
When we talked on Wednesday last week, Chip, and we talked about, you know, being back there and all the luminaries that you'd surrounded yourself with, the Bob Baffords of the world, the Wayne Lucases of the world, and some of the great trainers, Todd Pletcher. What did you glean from them, you know, during the week that you know, kind of made it maybe even a little bit easier, maybe gave you a little more confidence as the week went on?
I don't suppose I had any more confidence. You know, probably if anything, your level goes down as you watch these horses work and stuff. The good thing for me was we were long enough of a shot that there was no real pressure like there is if you're the 3-5 shot, you
right.
know, and so it was a little bit easier to take. Everybody here at Churchill treated me super. All the other trainers, everybody. The way they set it up here, you really have a real good time the whole time you're here waiting. So,
Chip Woolley.
It was a great time.
Chip Woolley joining us here on Fox Sports New Mexico, AM 1340. Chip is the trainer of Mind That Bird, the 50-1 upset winner of the 2009 Kentucky Derby. Chip, you've got horses stabled here at Sunray Park and Casino. We watched you had a nice winner yesterday, the opening race yesterday at Sunray with Louisiana Feature, won a quarter horse. I mean, what do you tell your owners now? I mean, what's it going to be like to get you on the phone now if you're an owner of a quarter horse in the state of New Mexico?
Oh, I'm just me, and that's not going to change. I like where I'm at. I like what I'm doing, and I love the state of New Mexico. They've treated me great, and I'm looking forward to coming home at some point.
Chip, what does this mean for racing, not just at Sunray Park, but obviously there's been so much talk over the last few months here in New Mexico about the non-graded status of the Sunland Park Derby. And now, obviously, with the win from Advice a couple weeks earlier in the Lexington Stakes, your win now in the Kentucky Derby, the Graded Stakes Committee is going to be under enormous pressure to put a graded status, whether it be a Grade 2 or a Grade 3 status on the Sunland Park Derby. What are your thoughts as we approach the end of the year and when that situation is going to come up?
Well, I'm hoping that they're going to have to face the fact that this horse deserves the credit, and that the race deserves the credit to be a graded stake, no less than a Grade 3, but I'm thinking it should be at least a Grade 2.
Big pay-per-view event coming up on Saturday. It is Juan Manuel Marquez facing Floyd Mayweather in Floyd Mayweather's comeback bout. Should be a great bout. It's coming up Saturday on HBO Pay-Per-View. And as he is wont to do sometimes when we have a big event coming up on HBO Pay-Per-View, joining us this morning on the Paradise Village phone lines is our very good friend. I've known this man virtually my entire life. Bert Sugar joining us this morning on the Paradise Village phone lines. Bert, good morning. Welcome back to the show. And before we get into this weekend's big event, and it is a huge, huge event for Floyd Mayweather coming off the long layoff, and of course, you know, he had the injury that postponed this match for a little while. We'll get into all of those things. I know we talked a little bit before we went on the air just here this morning about Bob Arum's quotes and Bob Arum's discussion and I guess his description, if you will, of the MMA fighter and the MMA boxer as opposed to the boxing fan and the boxer himself. Let me get your thoughts before we hear from Bob Arum. I want to get your thoughts on where the sport of MMA is as opposed to the sport of boxing. Are the two sports comparable in any way right now?
Well, there's some comparability, assuredly. You're in a ring, and theirs is a ring. You know, there is some of it that's boxing. The rest of it is sort of grab ass. I don't know what it is. It's a combination of every discipline or non-discipline in the world. But it does resonate with the younger kids. I mean, we're in, if boxing is the sweet science, and as someone once said, Bud Schoberg, the late Bud Schoberg said, it's chess played with human bodies. In many ways, the ultimate fighting is Grand Theft Auto played with human bodies. We're in a more violent world, and it resonates with the younger crowd. And I've kidded about it, and I love to kid about things. I even kid about boxing. You heard me. I said what I love about mixed martial arts is I haven't seen two men trying to mount each other since Haight Ashbury back in the late 60s, early 70s. But I'm given to understand Bob takes it over the line and really comes out with some, you know, some slurs and smears, and I don't agree with that.
And I want to play one of the clips for you here about Bob Arum's thoughts about the MMA fighter as opposed to the boxer. And this is Bob Arum. This was an interview that he conducted with a reporter on Monday.
For me and people like me, it is not something that they ever care to see. They've watched it. It's horrible. Guys rolling around like homosexuals on the ground. I mean, it is not a sport that shows great, great talent. The guys who throw punches can't throw a punch to save their ass. When the punches land, the guys have no chins. These are not like boxes. They are not trained like boxes.
All right, so let me get your thoughts, I suppose, as it relates to the boxer versus the MMA athlete. Is there a reasonable explanation to assume that an MMA fighter can challenge a boxer in a boxing match, and by the same token, can a boxer compete with an MMA fighter in an MMA match?
No, ultimate fighting is ultimate anything. It's like bungee jumping to me, but it does appeal. I don't think they can match up against a fighter with gloves on in a fight, not a kicking match, a fight. You know, to me, it's a bar fight without broken beer bottles, but it appeals to the kids. And it's a young group that follows them. And I won't get into slurs. I just think that they have a place and their own sport, and boxing has a place. And boxing is more worldly and accepted across around the world. Mixed martial arts has made many gains, but one study I showed, Steve, shows that only 5% of the mixed martial arts fans are also boxing fans, or vice versa.
Talking to Christy Scales of the Dallas Cowboys Radio Network, how much of Miles Austin's success so far, these last couple of weeks in particular, can be attributed to Roy Williams, whether on a positive or negative, since I know that Roy Williams attracts a lot of attention, but it's clearly obvious when you're watching the game that Miles runs a crisper route, he runs a faster route than Roy Williams does. Is Roy Williams starting to become number two now on that depth chart in the Dallas Cowboy wide receiving corps?
Well, I tell you what people are saying around here is, why is Roy holding on to his starter status? I mean, shouldn't Patrick Creighton, if you're going on production, shouldn't Patrick Creighton be the starter alongside Miles Austin? Because Miles is planted there now. I don't think he's coming out unless there's injury. But, you know, Roy, like, only 40% of the passes targeted to him have been receptions. Now, that doesn't mean that every pass was perfect. There are, you know, a couple that are low or a couple that are high, but, I mean, he's just not getting the production out of him. And the thing is, yes, he's had the rib injury, but, you know, if you're out there, you're expected to produce, whether your ribs are sore or not. So, you know, last week before the Atlanta game, he was at, it was the one-year anniversary of the trade that brought him from Detroit to Dallas, and he was asked, you know, his thoughts on the year, and he said average to below average. So he knows it, and he feels the pressure. Romo was asked the question about Roy this week, and he said that he still has confidence in him because he sees all the good things he does in practice and how hard he works. So, you know, everyone's saying the right thing, Steve. It just hasn't manifested itself on the field yet.
Now, how is it that usually Dallas, when they're home, they get the afternoon slot? How is it they get the morning slot game?
Well, it's Seattle.
I mean, how's that work?
It has to do with the opponent.
Okay.
And also, I don't think, you know, ever since Favre signed with the Vikings, there was no doubt that Favre was going to move that game.
Okay, right.
To the 3:15.
Okay,
so,
okay.
Yeah, so Favre back in the Vikings back in Green Bay is the 3:15. But, yeah, we've got now, this is something that we had in the early aughts, you know, back in those 5-11 seasons.